Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people. And their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for April 5th, 2015, and Easter Sunday this April 5th. Happy Easter, everybody out there. Welcome, Catherine Smith.
Hello, everyone. Greetings from Atlanta.
And welcome, Tim Shiflett.
Good evening, sir.
Yeah, kind of winding down. Kind of a little colder Easter and a drear evening than it started off, but time to talk a little politics. And tonight on the show, in about 15, 20 minutes, Clarkston Mayor Ted Terry will join us to talk about a training that he's kind of doing the publicity and coordinating on. And then we might ask him some about Clarkston, maybe some about the Georgia legislature, whatever comes up. But until then, we've got some topics. And Catherine and Tim, I don't know if y'all remember, but last week we were discussing a topic, and then our guest, David Neer, called in, and we kept David nearly to the end of the show, so we never got a chance to pick up on our topic. And I thought, well, sure enough, you know, Daily Kos has written about it, it's been written about other places, let's pick up on it. And we were talking about how Georgia has not gotten as much negative publicity as Arkansas and Indiana, and why that might be. Well, since then, the Georgia legislature kind of just let that religious freedom bill die and said that maybe they learned a lesson from Indiana and Arkansas and all the negative publicity that those two states have gotten. Catherine, you're at the legislature more than us. Do you think that Nathan Deal and other Republicans kind of watched what was going on and said, let's keep Georgia out of this?
I think there was a little bit of that, and I think that, I think there was a distaste for it before that on both sides of the aisle. Obviously, the Democrats were by and large against it. I don't think anybody was in favor of it. But the GOP and the Republicans in the state house had been less than enthusiastic about it. Leading up to Sine Die, and then leading up to last week, and then with all the attention that particularly Indiana was getting, I think that just solidified the distaste for it in the Georgia legislature, and I think that played a large part in it not gaining enough traction to even be voted on. It'll come back next year, though.
Well, somebody might want to come back with it, but I have a feeling it may not get even as much support as it did this year, because I will say this, as much as Georgia's unemployment rate had been just absolutely terrible through election, in the past, say, 6 months, it seems like the Deal administration, or Georgia, we can say, is on a roll. They've recruited a lot of big companies. There's talks of more companies coming. And they just, I think a lot of Republicans, the big leaders, if you will, recruiting new business is more important than discriminating against gays. And that's good that they value, you know, business over discrimination. That's kind of part of Atlanta's history with the civil rights movement, city too busy to hate. It's not that they were, a lot of those leaders from the 50s and 60s were as forward-thinking as we'd like for them to be on race. They just wanted the city of Atlanta and the state of Georgia to move forward, so that was more important than the discrimination. So maybe that's kind of a lesson, 50 years later. Maybe I'm too sunny about this thing. Tim, you've seen the publicity that Catherine's right. Indiana's even got more than negative publicity than Arkansas. I did see the pizza place that said they wouldn't fix pizzas for a gay wedding. And I sat there and I was thinking, okay, the wedding that has all this pizza. I thought, well, okay, it would be a same-sex marriage. It'd be two straight dudes. I don't know why they'd be getting married, but those are the only people that might be wanting to get pizza at their wedding. But, Tim, why is Indiana really so pushing this so much and getting all this publicity?
Well, you know, I'm not sure Indiana's the kind of state now you would expect to even see something like this happening in. You wouldn't think that Governor Pence would be the type that would be involved in something like this, because a lot of people thought he had national aspirations. You would think you would see something like this more down this way. Arkansas, you know, we know who the governor of Arkansas is now. It's Walmart, right?
yeah.
But as far as Georgia and it not getting a vote, I've got another angle. I'm wondering if this had anything to do with the transportation bill. You know, it was pretty contentious in itself. The governor really wanted to get this pushed through. He certainly did not want the unwelcome distraction of this Religious Freedom Restoration Act, or whatever they call the thing. And I was just wondering if some orders came down to kind of let this go over to a committee and let the clock run out on it, because they were going to catch an up-flack about this transportation bill and the taxes that go with it that they swore up and down would never happen. He couldn't afford to let this religious freedom bill derail that. I agree with Catherine that next year will be back, but it's just an angle I was wondering about. If there was something else beside the blowback in Arkansas and Indiana, but that's because it seems that no matter what they do, they're in solid control anyway. So
yeah, different priorities. Well, they are in control legislatively, but they can't, you mentioned Walmart, they can't control business and how business reacts. Business can just move their, Volvo could see this, and Volvo's looking at Georgia for their headquarters. Volvo could say, we want no part of this, because you'd have to think that Sweden is probably a little more forward-thinking than your average Southern Republican on how they view this thing.
Yep. But did you not notice that business really weighed in late on this thing here?
Yeah, they did.
People like Coca-Cola and stuff that you would have expected to jump into the fray much, much, much earlier. It was almost as if they waded in with their opinion after the die was cast anyway. So I'm not sure they made much difference.
To be fair, we don't know what was going on behind the scenes. So we don't know if, you know, Coca-Cola, Home Depot, you know, the Chamber, all those, we don't know what kind of conversations were going on behind the scenes with those companies. We just don't know. I'm not saying that they were going on, but it's important to remember that a lot of this is inside communication that we don't know about. You know, we don't know who's talking to who on the phone or what emails are going back and forth, who's meeting who in the anterooms at the Capitol. So just, I think, you know, a lot of people have been quick to say that, you know, where were Coca-Cola, where was Home Depot? We just don't know if those conversations were going on, but we just didn't know about them.
Yeah, and I do think it was more of not worrying about some major company that's founded in here and has a 100-year history here, like Coca-Cola. Delta's getting close and I get, you know, getting all up there. And it's more the new companies, what they would think. You've got the film industry. Catherine, we had Charlie Harper on the last time we talked about the film industry. Well, if you had this type of bill and people wanted to avoid it, people from Hollywood would definitely say, well, hey, we might get a tax break in Georgia, but we don't like their politics, so we're going back out to California, and all this booming industry you have could just kind of start to slow down. And so I think there's just so many good reasons why not to be the face of this. really nobody has to be the face of this, but if somebody felt they had to be, let Indiana, let Arkansas have it and see what happens. And what's interesting, I believe the Alabama, the Mississippi, all these other state legislatures are meeting, and I haven't heard a lot of talk about bills like this in their state. Is this thing,
well,
you know, a lot of these bills, the Republicans
it, so
have an idea, they love to copy it.
Mississippi and Alabama already have these laws.
They already have them? Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't know they had these. You know, I figured this was something. You know how the Republicans do. They get an idea, like we were talking about last week with the electoral vote splitting, and it just spreads like wildfire, if you will, to the next state where they control everything. So, well, maybe they already had them on the book a while back because, you know, there wasn't the, if it was just in the last year or two, I don't got the publicity either.
Well, Mississippi passed it last year.
Yeah. Well,
and I think Alabama's had it for a while.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. Well, isn't enough damage done just because it was brought up here to start with? I mean, enough negative publicity generated because it was brought up here to start with? It's not like it was voted down. I mean, any political person knows that was sent to committee where it would just sit there. So they wouldn't have to have a vote on it.
Well,
it didn't pass,
and that's kind of big in the end.
It didn't pass, but it's there hanging over us to probably come back. Right.
Yeah.
Well, I think a lot of times I
don't think it's quite as bad, but I agree that, you know, just the fact that it's entertained can have a negative connotation.
Well, I tell you where it's not as bad. Saturday Night Live for two weeks ago they had a new show. They talked about it. Particularly, they talked about it with Indiana again last night. They made a joke or two it on the newscast. And it was all about Indiana. While political insiders like us, we may know about these two states other than ours, our state, if another bill comes up in another state, we may know about it. But the average person, they're going to see what, you know, is mentioned about those states. And if our bill just doesn't make that national consciousness, it kind of keeps us out of it. And that's where I guess the positive is only the real insiders, I think, really follow this, other than people in the state, and I guess the damage would be done and people associating this with us outside of our state. So I think there's a difference there. Well, let's go ahead and talk about a topic that I guess some could say was related. Several media sources, including Gawker, have talked about Tom Cotton and why a lot of folks in Arkansas and in Washington who've started to wonder about his sexual orientation. Now, this is not the first time that this has been brought up about a Republican. My first question would be, is it really our business? Or is it, you know, the media's business or whatever you want to say? Catherine, do you think this is something that, you know, really needs to be discussed?
No. I just don't think it's anybody's business. I don't understand the need to discuss it. I think the whole thing is distasteful.
And once again, I guess maybe part of the people are thinking, well, I wonder how he feels on this Arkansas bill. It isn't his home state. He just got elected. Does this show hypocrisy on somebody's part? I guess that's the angles they try to use. Tim, how much is this our business, if you will? Why are people speculating about this?
I tell you what, I agree with Catherine here. I just, you know, I wish they'd put an iron clamp down on stuff like this. This smearing people's personal and private lives for political gain can just go way out of bounds very quickly. I know it's been done in this country ever since its founding, really. The nastiest campaign in history was probably the campaign 1828, you know, but still.
I think the suggestion that it's smear is distasteful as well. I mean, I think the suggestion that that he may or may not be gay. If there's some, I think the fact that it would be considered a smear campaign is distasteful as well. So what? So what if he's gay?
Yeah.
So what?
Yeah, and I think a lot of it.
I mean, I understand the idea that he, you know, his behavior. If that's the case, it's hypocritical. Whatever. I think that it does it takes us backwards when we talk about someone's sexual preference as and their sexual identity as if it's somehow a smear to suggest that someone is gay or is not straight. That the idea that has any kind of negative connotations is distasteful as well.
Well, I guess in the historical context, what was the I believe it was Paul Newman's line in Blade, in Louisiana, you're okay as long as you didn't get caught in bed with a dead girl or a live boy. Now that's something.
Well,
that's
different
even
though.
Even
that's
now
you're talking
or
about
down the road,
children. It is a difference in when you're talking about children than when you're talking about adults.
I think what they meant was a female or a male. They weren't talking about, you know, actual children. They were talking about, you know, an adult.
No.
But that's what I'm saying. If things are changing on this, and it won't be, like, if we found out about a politician, it would not be something that would end their career today. It might have been something that ended somebody's career 20, 30 years ago.
It was like what they did to Clinton with the women. I understand he made it easy for them and all that, but they should just leave stuff like that alone, you know.
Yeah, and
I
think a lot of this comes from this whole idea of identity politics, that if you look a certain way, if you have certain characteristics about you, you're supposed to belong to a certain party, vote a certain way. I think this is why a lot of folks get bothered by Tim Scott. Oh, he's African-American. He should be a Democrat. If Tom Cotton were to, well, I don't know. I got plenty of other things to concern myself with that. But people think, well, he should be a Democrat. Well, there's no way he should be. But then at the same token, so then if you're a white, Southern Baptist male, heterosexual, you're supposed to be a Republican, right? Well, Bill Clinton and Al Gore and Jimmy Carter all don't fit that bill. So I think all this identity politics, people like to put people in a box for whatever reason.
I think it goes beyond that. I think it's this anything to win mentality. And in the minds of those people, anything, including a person's personal and private life, is fair game. And you know what? That don't make it right. No, it's not.
The guy's got 6 years, 5 years, 10 months or whatever before he'd stand election again. I don't know my math. I can see that's when someone would take his seat. I guess it's more like 5 years and 8 months before he'd stand election. That's kind of a long range plan if somebody's thinking about taking his seat. Additionally, would it be a Democrat thinking, oh, well, I can hurt him in the general, or would it be a Republican thinking they could primary him, if you will? I guess if somebody's thinking
I'm sorry to say, I'm sorry to say, in this case, it looks like our side, people on our side, are trying to use this situation to embarrass, humiliate this man or whatever, or hurt him politically. Because of that letter he wrote or the talking he's doing and all of that. And it just shouldn't be done.
I do think this. I think it could be people on our side, not they're thinking, oh, we could win this seat in 5+ years. They're thinking, oh, he ought to be a Democrat, and he's in the wrong party because if he really is gay,
he is a conservative Republican.
And they want to put him in that box.
For crying out loud. He's a conservative Republican. What does he he does in the bedroom have to do with that besides nothing?
Oh, I know. People can be whatever they want to be. They can feel one way in their mind and fit into whatever you know, category they want to otherwise. I'm just saying that's why I think a lot will feel, and it's on both sides of the aisle with a lot of different traits, if you will, whatever you want to say.
I don't like to have anything to do with this kind of conversation, honestly. I think that it has no place in legitimate political conversation, and I think it's – I just find the whole thing distasteful. I mean, I don't like the guy. I think he's – you know, I don't like the things that he stands for, but I don't really have – I don't feel in any way in a position to comment on his personal life. It's none of my business.
Yeah, and if you notice, we did spend a lot of time.
They're distasteful, guys. You remember what they did to McCain in South Carolina in 2000? You remember what happened? He adopts a daughter from
Bangladesh.
And you know what they said about that. I mean, come on. Some things ought to be off the table. Your private life should be off the table unless you've broken a law or something, you know.
And when that happened, I just even, in 2008, I honestly was just kind of at a loss at how anybody thought that would even help you. That was so noble what he did. It ought to have been something, really shouldn't have got him votes or lost him votes, either one, but if it did either, it should have gotten him votes because people would respect that. It kind of didn't fit into the, you know, the guy with all the houses and, you know, the money and all that.
Well, it happened in 2000 in the primaries, and you know whose campaign did it, so.
Oh, yeah, but it's, you know, what's the old saying, that dog won't hunt? You have to wonder why that worked. Hard to say. Well, let's keep moving through legislative bills in the South, get back to there. And the next one would be a Missouri Republican has a bill, and he has looked and he's found that there's abuses in the food stamp program. Also, there's another one to kind of piggyback with welfare payments too. But he finds that there's been abuses in the food stamp program, and he wants to limit what folks can buy. And kind of strangely enough, he was after steak and certain kinds of seafood like lobster. But then he also talked about, like, you know, sugary sodas and things that aren't healthy. And so people quickly jumped on and said, well, protein's good. Seafood's really good protein. So do you want to have things that aren't expensive, or do you want to have things that are just healthy? Because these things contradict. And so they kind of, you know, pointed that out, if you will. And there are things that you can't buy, and the way they all that the most food stamp programs work, they're no longer little stamps, if you will. They're cards with picture IDs, and there's far less fraud, just straight out, you know, gambling the food stamps, if you will, the stories. And probably did happen at times, but you can't do that anymore. So you have to go to the grocery store and purchase things. So really a lot of the fraud he's worried about has been taken out, you know, through technology. But, Catherine, I guess you've heard about this bill throughout the week. It's been a lot of places. But it looks like that this legislator, and I'm trying to look for his name, her name, I believe it was a he when I did read it, was pretty short-sighted, correct?
Well, yeah. I mean, this is just such a ridiculous suggestion. Like, first of all, let's talk about the fact that in many communities in the United States, there are no grocery stores, especially in lower socioeconomic communities, neighborhoods. There are not like supermarkets. You know, they call them food deserts. There's no place to buy. There's no complete, you know, comprehensive grocery stores in many communities. There are many in Atlanta. The closest grocery store that has, you know, a full complement of produce and dairy and meat departments are very few. If we're worried about the health and, you know, healthy diets of communities, let's first talk about providing ways for them to get healthy food, okay? I just think the whole idea of these smaller government conservatives drive me crazy. They want smaller government, but then, they want to try to figure out a way that, you know, someone on food stamps can't have a steak every once in a while. Like, really? This is, it's just ridiculous. How are they going to do it anyway? What, are they going to have certain items that are not, like, it's fine to stand stand up and say stuff like that, but then how do you do it? How does it logistically work?
Well, you can actually have, you know, everything's got a barcode. The barcode's unique, and most of the barcodes are, you know, I guess you'd say internationalized because they are the same on the product. But that keeps folks from just saying, well, buy beer. I mean, which I think most of us would agree that you don't need to buy, you know, say alcohol.
You already can't do that.
Oh, I know you can.
That's
would tighten in the barcode. Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. But what it is the barcode, you can go through these barcode systems and you could then, you know, ban the items through the card system. See, technology, I guess, it meets his need, but then he wants to expand it further. Like, for instance, when he got into seafood, apparently the way he worded the bill, you can't have a tuna fish. Well, a can of tuna fish is not really that expensive. It's really healthy. I mean, until you put some mayonnaise or something else in it. If you talk about just straight tuna fish, I mean, it's better than a protein shake for you. It's going to, when you eat it, you can eat just the can itself, the canned tuna fish, and it's really going to stick with you. It's not going to, you're not going to be hungry. So it really, I mean, it's a dumb thing to ban. I mean, if you could pick just a handful of foods to eat all the time, you know, a can of tuna fish every other day would be great for you. So I don't know why he would, unless he worded his bill that, you know, stupidly, he just said seafood. I mean, a can of salmon. I mean, that's good for you, too, and you can put a little bread in that and, you know, feed your whole family. And so that's not an expensive thing either, if he's just thinking about lobster, which, I mean, honestly, when you talk about, you know, wasting money, I don't know that even lobster, in a supermarket environment, is really that big of a money expenditure. It's not like going to Red Lobster or some other seafood place where you have to buy the lobster tail for $20. I don't even know what it costs in the tank there, but I know anytime you buy anything at home and cook it, it's far cheaper than going out to eat. So it's really not as egregious as even he would claim, I would think. One funny thing is he said something about steak, which apparently there's no line item when you buy groceries called steak. You have to buy, you know, ground chuck or I'm trying to think all the cuts of meat. Tim, you're the chef on the show. What are the actual cuts of meat called, some of those?
You got your sirloins and your T-bones and, you know, stuff like that. Steak is a very cheap type cut of steak, like a breakfast steak or something. But what? This Bratton is this guy's name that wrote this bill. And I'd like to ask him something. Where do these people keep seeing people on food stamps buying all of this fancy stuff and living it up? Does he have any idea what they get in food stamps?
Yeah.
A family of four in this country gets, on average, $532.28 a month. That's about $133 per person per month. Now, think about that for just a minute. People get cookies probably because they're cheap. You know, chips cheaper than potatoes. People like that would eat a lot of fast food because it's cheap. That's what they get. They don't go to the store and load up on porterhouses and, you know, they're not going to fix beef Wellington when the center cut beef is $15 a pound. They're not going to go buy lobsters. Heck, I don't even go buy lobsters. What is wrong with these people if they want to kick poor people around like this?
He wanted to ban luxury items, and the luxury items, cookies, chips, energy drinks, soft drinks, seafood, or steak, and I'm sure the energy drinks was maybe a big thing, and those are a bit pricier than, say, cans of soft drinks. And you don't buy them in 2-liter bottles. You buy them by the can, and when you buy them by the unit there, it costs more. And then later he said, you know, I didn't want to keep people from buying cans of tuna fish and fish sticks. So apparently at some point in the process of this bill, somebody thought a fish stick was a luxury food item. And from somebody that probably grew up eating those at least twice a month, I will tell you that whether it's Mrs. Paul's or Gorton's, a fish stick is never a luxury item. Did I ever tell you about Sea Dogs? You know, they talk about the school lunch program. When I was in junior high, never served this in elementary school, never served it in high school. They had something called a Sea Dog, which would have been a fish stick in a hot dog bun. Have not heard of that anywhere since. But you want to talk about some breading. I don't know if Representative Brandt would want to ban that or not, but the Sea Dog would be a fish stick base, if you will. Does this thing go anywhere? Do y'all think this bill passes, or does it just die because it's been ridiculed?
I doubt it goes anywhere.
Surely not. Oh, surely not. Good grief. I mean, how much further can they go with this craziness? We've got people that we used to talk about being in the lunatic fringe, coming up with all this crazy stuff, that are now sitting in public office somewhere coming up with this stuff. What do we expect when we elect people? Is this what they want for public servants?
Well, and then you have to wonder, I mean, this is a party that, the philosophical base of the party is supposedly, you know, Atlas Shrugged and Ayn Rand and all the folks at the Heritage Foundation.
You know what it used not to be.
But if you think about some of these people, they don't look like they could read and comprehend some of those publications. Because even if you wanted to do this, you would have the good sense to, you know, draft the bill out to where you weren't banning cans of tuna. You could go at a little bit of time. Maybe you could ban, say, just energy drinks. And see how that worked, and then add something else to it.
Why are they even doing this? Why are they wasting the time of the taxpayers even doing something like this, kicking poor people around? Do they really think, David, that there's a bunch of people out there living it up, what Reagan used to call welfare queens? Does he really think that there's people out there living it up, going to the store, getting four buggies and loading them up with steaks and all that, and poor little pitiful me works for a living and I can't hardly afford to put nothing in my buggy? You've heard all that stuff out of people.
They've got to sell a bad guy, and this is their bad guy. His constituents work hard and they get taken by these people buying, you know, lobsters and monster sodas.
Isn't it funny that the bogeyman's always somebody can't defend themselves?
Let's talk about this.
To my argument that, you know, in some of these communities, there's no choice but to buy prepared, expensive food in a small grocery market that doesn't even offer some of these more healthy alternatives that he's apparently wishing people would buy. Well,
and I don't know if he's banning the, you know, the Swanson Hungry Man dinner or what have you. And honestly, with produce, if he's trying to, you know, save the taxpayers' money, produce is expensive. It's good for you.
Uh-huh.
It costs a lot of money, to some types of it. So it's what ends is he trying to meet? Is he trying to get people to be healthier, or is he trying to just save the taxpayers' dollar by, you know, finding the cheapest food he can find to serve the people, if you will?
But it's not. It doesn't save anybody any money for them to for someone to not buy a steak. It's all it does is someone decides, well, I've got X amount of money, and this month it's my birthday, or, you know, we have a special occasion or whatever. or for whatever reason, I'm going to skip, you know, I'm going to eat, you know, lower cost foods for X many days so that we can have a treat and have a steak or a lobster. I don't think this happens very often, but, you know, it just...
And obviously, things out of the meat department, I mean, regular, you know, any type of steak slash ground chuck, you know, whatever it is, I just don't see who thinks that's really the problem if somebody's trying to critically look at either health or dollars spent, that's the issue. Well, I guess this guy's got a brother maybe over in Kansas. You know, Kansas and Missouri share a pretty long border. He is once again, it's been sent to Sam Brownback death. There's the he. This person, I don't know if it's male or female, I wish they'd tell the author and give this person credit. They've come up with a bill where they have banned spending welfare on cruise ships. It says the bill prohibits welfare recipients from spending their benefits on certain types of businesses, including liquor stores, fortune tellers, swimming pools, and cruise ships. I think there's a little bit of irony because when you think of, you know, dry, landlocked states, is Kansas not the epitome of the dry, landlocked state? And yet they're banning people from the cruise ship. You know, I guess if you hated the welfare recipient, they'd have to drive to, say, San Diego or Miami to catch the thing. You know, maybe they don't come back. But this guy comes up with this bill, this person, I should say, comes up with this bill. I love the fortune teller part of it. You know, because everybody's got their own lobby and lobbyists. Wouldn't you have loved to seen all the fortune tellers of Kansas come and lobby against this bill because they're getting all that good welfare money from people reading their palms and stuff? I'm sure this was an epidemic going on. How does this fit in? I guess, Catherine, is this just more of the same? Is this bill better, worse compared to the Missouri bill? What are your thoughts?
Well, I think that, you know, reading about this, I think the beyond, you know, limiting the where you can spend your benefits, the bigger concern is that they're limiting the amount of money they can withdraw from their card at a daily maximum of $25. So if you can't, if you don't have a checking account, you can't pay your rent, right? Like you can't withdraw enough money to pay your rent unless you do it at $25 a day, and then you get nicked for transaction costs for every one of those transactions. So it's just like Tim said, I don't know why these people have to beat up on poor people. Like, really, you're going to – how many – I mean, I'm sure there might be an example of someone who spent their TANF money on a cruise ship, but how often does that really happen? Do we really want to limit their access to those funds because there might be a couple people who, you know, went to the tarot card reader at the, you know – corner fortune teller. I mean, it just seems like Tim said, why are they wasting their time on these kind of things? What, there must have been something that happened. Like, don't you, when I read things like this, I'm like, okay, somebody saw someone do something and they didn't like it. And either they ran there, it either happened to that person who wrote the bill or someone, one of their constituents came to them and said, I was at the fortune teller and this person who I know is on welfare, use their, you know, spent their money at the fortune teller. You need to do something about it. Like, where does this come from?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, and then you have to think, I found his name, Representative Michael O'Donnell. Was he at the tarot card reader or the palm reader and saw one of these people? I don't know. It was real funny. He said, this is about prosperity. This is about having a great life. I don't know why that quote fits this bill. I mean, I could see you being defensible and saying this is about teaching people, you know, responsibility. And you know, and once again, I think you're right about that, Catherine. If somebody can only get $25 out a day and then they hit with say a dollar transaction fee, that just wastes the money unless, you know, you've got somebody in the industry for transaction fees. didn't help, and then they can't buy things that I guess you would assume that everybody would say you needed, which would be shelter. Now, if you don't like the payments whatsoever, you're probably trying to just get rid of, you know, the whole system.
You know,
and that may be what both of these representatives are trying to do, Kim. They're trying to shrink it down to where they
shrink
can
what down? Listen to this. Let's just take what the richest.
What's the Northwest guy? He's their philosophical leader.
Right.
And this may
be
what they're all trying to do. They're trying to seek strength aside so they can
some
spending the
facts here. Let's have some spending facts. And let's just pick out one of the richest states in the country. I got a list of them. I mean, let's pick New York out. The average welfare benefit in that state is about $24,000. And about half of that is Medicaid. A person on the minimum wage with Medicaid would be several thousand dollars off than the welfare family. There again, where do they get the idea that people on welfare are living it up? They're not flying into liquor stores and fortune tellers swimming through. I mean, cruise ships, it's craziness. Where do they get this stuff? I mean, that's not even in reality within the solar system. People out on Jupiter wouldn't even be thinking this. Where are they getting this stuff? I'll tell you what, it's going to get worse if we don't throw some of these clowns out of office. This is absolute craziness. Like I said, this is the kind of stuff that the lunatic fringe screams about, the mythical world where, you know, the takers are living it up, sitting at home, watching the prices rise, eating steak, driving around in Cadillacs, and it just doesn't happen.
Well,
you know,
and obviously there's a lot of people that believe that myth. Because tell me, I've seen 100 of those bumper stickers, you know, work harder, someone on welfare is depending on you. Have y'all both seen those?
Yeah, unfortunately.
Up in our county? Yeah, I mean, you've seen
them.
Obviously, people believe that stuff because they believe it enough not only to believe it, but they put it on their car because they think that, you know, everybody's going to chuckle and agree with them, and, you know, and that's where this kind of bill comes from. And so this is a state, Kansas, where there was a good chance that they were going to vote out their governor, Sam Brownback, because he had cut education funding, cut some other government funding, to the point where, you know, the everyday average, probably average Republican voting Kansas citizen was feeling it and didn't like it. And in the end, just because the state of Kansas is so Republican, he prevailed. And then here's what they're getting out of their legislature. A guy banning tarot card readers and
prevailed because there was a Republican wave. That dude had run that state fiscally off the cliff. He had cut taxes so deeply that they didn't even have enough money to run basic services out there anymore. And people were saying, wait a minute, what's going on here? And then I'd be darned if they didn't turn right around and vote him right back into office. Good.
Yeah, well, that's because people now vote everything based on national beliefs. Because, you know, they could have easily voted if they go, oh, I can't stand the Democrats in federal government. They could have voted Republican at the federal level and still voted Democrat. And that guy, that was the independent that was run for Senate. They could have voted Democratic at the state level, but they didn't even have enough of the voters didn't have enough
foresight
to do that. They just voted a straight ticket again.
You've heard of the Cato Institute. Very big conservative think tank. They put out this big story about welfare, and they said something like the current welfare system provides such a high level of benefits that it acts as a disincentive for work. And, you know, I don't mind them being opposed to welfare, but that's a damn lie. That is an outright lie.
And they know it's an outright lie. They'd have to know it if they have any sense in their heads at all. I mean, God, it's maddening, isn't it?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and they, because I guess they assume that no one aspires to anything greater. And that's their assumption.
You're quite about it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's, well, let's go on to the next topic, and public policy polling. They did a new poll looking at pretty much the entire presidential race, and the key finding was Ted Cruz jumped into the race, and he's jumped up into the, you know, the top of the pack, if you will. Catherine, what's kind of your thoughts on his findings?
Not surprised. He got a lot of attention.
Mm-hmm.
His name recognition probably went up.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as people, I mean, I, and you know, the other, we'll probably get into this, but the people who lost traction, not surprising either, because they were actually the people that we talked about might lose traction if he gained some traction. So, you know, it's not really surprising because, you know, it was the big story for a few days. So, you know, people maybe took a look at him and said, oh, well, I thought I was going to like so-and-so, but now I think I like him. You know, it doesn't surprise me. I'm sure it was what he was shooting for by being the first one to declare.
Yeah. Tim, did you order the coloring book?
Did I do what?
Have you ordered the coloring book?
Oh, no, I haven't. And I also haven't ordered green eggs and ham yet. Although that should be a big hit, right?
You know I'm a reading specialist, and I'll go ahead and tell you. You can't tackle green eggs and ham until you can successfully read the Ted Cruz coloring book. That's a lower reading level. You gotta, you know.
Well, you know,
baby step.
Three years ago, David, you might remember this block of very conservative voters kept jumping from one candidate to another, and it seemed like what they were doing was looking for that golden candidate to knock off Mitt Romney. I really think they're doing that this year to try to derail Bush. Walker, Catherine was talking about some people that lost some steam. Walker was one of those that lost some steam. Huckabee was one of those that lost some steam. And what they were losing was these most conservative voters that are looking for someone to rally around to knock off Bush. I don't think they're done moving. I think they're going to do some more moving, and I just don't know who that'll be too, but they're looking for the anti-Bush, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, if you look, Scott Walker went from 25 to 20. Bush continues to poll 17. Cruz jumped up to 16%, so he's statistical tie with George Bush. Ben Carson and Rand Paul each at 10, and then Marco Rubio and Mike Huckabee at 6, Chris Christie at 4, and Rick Perry at 3. Can someone please tell Rick Perry it's over? You know, everybody knows you. 3%, that's, you know, what, statistically, and I'm in trouble with that word today, you're as likely to have 0% of the vote as you are 6. So, you know, I'm sure he's got more than zero, but still, no one wants it. Cruz is in the race, so there goes his Texas base. Jeb Bush, even though he's not, didn't serve from Texas, he's from Texas. So there's no, you know, state basis for Rick Perry. So you'd have to think that there's nothing there. Not that his 3% is any huge deal. But why does he continue to hang on, Catherine? Any ideas?
Rick Perry?
Why does he continue to stay in this thing?
I think he just envisions himself as president, don't you? I think it's it's an ego thing. I mean,
yeah.
I don't think there's any question that he's got a giant ego.
And I guess whenever he first served as lieutenant governor, he's been, or even in the legislature, he's been in elective office continually until he just now left you know, the last election. So I guess he just, that's what he does. He runs for things. Tim?
Yeah, you know, these guys are afflicted with two things. They think lightning will strike, and they'll ignore reality for that reason. And secondly, they get this Potomac fever, a lot of them. I'm sure right now, God help us all, that Barry Loudermilk is probably sitting around trying to figure out some way he can be president someday. and they just refuse. They're the last ones to realize it's over, or the last ones at least to admit it, even though in their heart of hearts they do know it. And that's what's wrong with Rick Perry. And I want to ask you about something, David. George Will, you mentioned statistics. George Will said statistically there is no way that Ted Cruz not only will be president, but that there is no way he'll get the nomination. Is Will right?
I think he's right on the first part, certainly. Second part, I do think that those people that are coming, that are running against him, are going to start a birther movement against him. And then a lot of those conservatives somewhere deep down will say, well, if we believed it about President Obama, I guess we've just got to be fair. And they're then going to switch to some other conservative that thinks 99.9% of the time like Ted Cruz. So what does it matter? And that joker was born somewhere in the, you know, the good old USA. And so they're going to go with that guy. Because, you know, I don't think these guys understand. They're all just a vessel for a movement. And the movement really doesn't care which piece it uses. And so it'll use Walker. It'll use Rubio. It'll use Cruz. It'll use Paul, whoever it is. Let's continue to go through some of these names. Ben Carson went from 18 to 10. Now, I think he's a bit of a celebrity candidate. You know, when Cuba Gooding Jr. plays your life in a movie, that kind of makes you a celebrity candidate. Is it just the celebrities worn off, or is there a better reason? Or I guess, is Ted Cruz just sucked up 8% of his vote? Catherine, why did he drop so much?
Yeah, I think Ted Cruz sucked up some of his support. I think there's a common thread there. You know, it's that Tea Party group.
Yeah, and it says that there's a lot of overlap between the voters who like Carson and the voters who like Cruz. And the if they polled some of the same folks, the Carson people did jump to Cruz. Tim Huckabee also went from 10% to 6%. Is that just Huckabee fatigue since he's been around as long as any of these guys on this list?
And it's those very conservative voters, I think, David, that I was talking about. I really think there's something to the fact that they're just drifting around looking for someone to coalesce around. And I think what Catherine hit on, the fact that Cruz has got some publicity because he was the first one to jump into the race and has been out there, they just gravitated toward him a little bit, and I don't think they're through moving either.
I agree. Yeah.
I think that's it.
Yeah, and then also Rand Paul. You know, there was a time in which he was a really big deal in, you know, conservative politics, and you would think he would start off at a base with all of his father's voters, which were always very fervent. But it seems like he hasn't really added any to anything his father had. Maybe didn't even coalesce all that vote. Why has Rand Paul not gotten any more traction than he has, Catherine?
I think it's the same thing. I mean, I think that they're all sort of attracting the same people. And, you know, he might be the, you know, next month's flavor. But right now it's Ted Cruz. And if Rand Paul does something noteworthy, then he might, you know, they might come back around to him at some point.
Yeah. Tim, any ideas on Ted Cruz? Well, I'm sorry, I keep saying the wrong name. Rand Paul, and why he hadn't caught fire anymore than he had.
No, I think he's settled in at about where his base is. Even though he's not as hardcore libertarian as, say, his father is, he's got that rep of being the hardcore libertarian, and I would figure 10% of Republican voters are in that vein, and I think that's where he's sitting, and I think that's what he's going to get all the way across the board in state after state after state. So I think he's right where he's supposed to be.
Yeah, well, let's talk about the one person we've just alluded to that's still in the top two in this poll. Watched Survivor this past week, and they had a, you know, old favorite, the one where they hang on to the pole, and it's who can hang on to the pole as long as possible without falling down. Is that Jeb Bush's election strategy? He's got the best name recognition. He's been around forever. His brother and father have been around even longer than him. And since he starts with that Bush name in the Republican primary, he's just going to hold on to the pole, and at the end of the day, he's going to have more delegates than all the rest of these characters. Or does he have a better strategy than that, Catherine?
I suppose that could be a strategy. I'm just not sure he's, you know, I'm not sure he's going to be able, he might not be able to withhold the wind and the sand and everything that might get in his way and knock him off that pole with Scott Walker hanging right next to him.
Yep. Tim, somebody somewhere is getting paid tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars, to write Jeb Bush a 100-plus page election strategy, and I just summed it up in a Survivor analogy. Huh. Am I way off base? Are these guys ripping off money that are making the big bucks with the 100-page election analysis?
I think it's three things with Jeb Bush. Number one, I am the establishment candidate. Number two, I'm the guy that can win the general election out of this crowd. And number three, it's my turn. Don't laugh at that third thing, because Republican voters, at least in modern historical times, lean heavily on that one. You know, it's this guy's turn, so he's our guy. And I think he has a good case to make for I'm the most electable general election candidate. The thing he ain't figured out yet is how to run that gamut of the most conservative voters in the party in the primaries by being the establishment candidate. That used to be the popular thing to be with them. Now, not so much. So he's going to have to kind of walk a tightrope. He can't go way far to the right. That's not who he is. He's got to stay close enough to the center to gravitate there for the general election. So it's going to be interesting to see what he does. You're right with the Survivor thing. Let's let these other guys savage each other, and let me just slip on through, pretty much like Romney and McCain did, wouldn't you say?
In some ways, and that establishment piece is key on it. And it's interesting, if the nominees were to be Jeb Bush and Hillary Clinton, it would be kind of both parties would be, it's their turn. Now, obviously, their narrative would try to be much more inspirational than that, which actually I don't think Jeb Bush hangs on. I think Mitt Romney hurts him a lot. I think a lot of these conservative Tea Party voters, they have not had their candidate for two straight elections, and they're going to say that that was the problem, that a more conservative candidate would have done better. They need to learn the lesson of Barry Goldwater, but they won't. But I think that they're going to rise up. I don't know if it'll be Scott Walker or Ted Cruz or maybe Rand Paul, maybe Marco Rubio, which we didn't mention much about him, but that was not a good first showing for him in this poll either. But I think somehow he's not been branded as conservative as some of these other ones, which is killing him in the primary. You know, he can be slightly, ever so slightly to the left of Ted Cruz. He can, you know, get 1 point less on the CPAC rating, and that 1% less, he'll get branded a moderate, which, you know, of course, in the Republican Party is a dirty word. And so
you're talking about Rubio, right?
Rubio. I think Rubio is more moderate than some of those other ones. When did you really
Let's look at the first four primaries or caucuses. Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, Florida. Where does Rubio win at?
I don't know. I mean, that's what I'm saying. I don't think his shot is good at all. It'd just be interesting to see. And obviously some of the Iowa polling may be more critical than some of the national polling.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we got plenty of weeks to discuss it in the future. But this show's pretty much wrapped up. It's right at 8 o'clock. So to our listeners, again, a happy Easter and good evening.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, guys.
Next week.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that.